This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. This week, I speak to rugby pundit, entrepreneur, mental health advocate, and author, Brent Pope.
This is me. This is the real Brent. This is who I am, warts and all. If you don't like that, well, I'm not in a situation, I'm not that type of person that says, well, boo-hoo, you know, I don't need you. But what I'm saying is that, you know, I do see it as reasonably brave to say you're vulnerable and to talk about your life and saying, okay. And a lot of areas I've messed up. Boy, I've messed up.
But we all have.
But we all have. Mm. Haven't we all sitting out there saying, you know, if my life had gone in a different direction. But I think what you said before is really inspirational, is that regardless of what of where life takes us, whatever road, that it could end up in a silver line.
Yeah,
you know, it could, you know, you go into a new job, you go into a new relationship, you go to a new country, whatever that is for you, that look at that journey as saying something that, okay, it's a change of direction in your life, but it also could be a good change, or it could be a wake-up call, or it could be a move to somewhere else in your life that could be good.
Brent has had a difficult few years, from the death of his father in 2019, and now his recent health issues he feels were brought about by a drug he was prescribed. In this conversation, he's reflective about his regrets in life and his hopes for the future, and it was an absolute honour to chat to him. Here it is.
So the past 18 months have been a really challenging time for everyone,
yeah.
But for some more than others, for so many different reasons. And you've had a lot of stuff kind of happen.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, a lot of stuff really over the last couple of years, because I lost my dad in 2019, and we were very close, and there's a lot of, you know, when you lose somebody and you haven't spent the best part of their life with them. And what I mean is I made that choice to come to Ireland and make it my home. I love Ireland and I love Irish people and consider myself sort of plastic paddy Irish now. But it comes with regrets in some regards, because my father, who I was very close to, I didn't kind of see his last 20 years of his life, nor did he see mine. Now, okay, you'd follow stuff that I was doing in the papers or whatever on videos, but I mean, there was some regret with that. So I went home in 2019. That was sort of sudden. I was on holiday in Portugal and I got a call from my brother saying Dad had passed away. And little things you think back, you know, I'd been back the Christmas before, and then I'd written a letter that I wanted to give to him to say what he meant in my life to me, and I didn't. And it's something I say now to people, like tell people that you love them and you care about them. Tell them every day, because it'll come a time when I sort of held off and I said, no, I'll give it to him next year. And then suddenly there wasn't a next year. So, yeah, that that then I was home just before COVID, and then I came back, and then things really started to unravel for me health wise. Nothing to do with COVID. I have my own conspiracy theory about what happened to me, but since that time, I've been really quite unwell.
Yeah,
physically, and then it also takes its toll mentally, obviously, because I put it to anybody that has had to undergo the number of hospital visits, consultant visits that I have, that it doesn't affect you mentally. You know, that you get down, you get, you know, you wait, you're in sort of what I call God's waiting room in a sense, you know, because you're waiting to hear back with results and tests, and you get a larger look at life, really. You know, it's a bit of a wake-up call too, you know, to the way that I need to live my life or whatever. And I'm not sort of talking, you know, and then there'll be days where, you know, today, thankfully, is not a bad day.
Okay.
So I try to map out days and sort of score them, you know, mental health-wise too, score them out of 10 and say, okay, well, yesterday was a 6 or 7 out of 10. You know, maybe tomorrow can be better. You know, and sometimes you'll drop down to a 2 or 3 where I'm in chronic pain, and it's like my system has completely broken down on a lot of levels. You know, your liver, my gastrointestinal tract, my nerves, all those things have really just packed up.
It can be so deceptive sometimes when you see somebody, can't it? That, you know, looks and kind of air quotes, looks well, which you do.
Yeah.
But then internally and what's happening in terms of how you feel, in terms of pain and the different ailments, it's not the case.
No, it's not that. It's far from the case, to be honest. And you make a good point, because people, I think they say it as a throwaway comment too sometimes. And, you know, we know all about Irish psychology. Oh, you're grand, you know, like everybody's grand, you know. But at one stage there, when I first started, when I was first, I lost about 15 to 20 kgs in about 2 weeks.
Oh, God.
You know,
okay.
I mean, that's a lot of weight. I came back from New Zealand at about 109 kgs, anybody's weight, probably about 17 and a half stone. And I dropped down to about, sort of 14 and a half for no reason. Wow. Still eating.
And got no answers?
And got answers to a degree, that my GI tract was inflamed and ulcerated right through, and I kept going back into hospitals to have more tests, and, you know, they would say, look, now the ulcers are starting to bleed and we don't know why. And, you know, I call myself Mr. Rare and Unusual, because that's what a lot of the consultants are coming back and saying, look, you're in a rare and unusual group, that we don't know why this is happening, but it is happening. Same with my liver. I'm an unusual subset. Like, I'm not diabetic or pre-diabetic, or I'm not a big drinker, I'm not a smoker, all those things, and yet my liver is packing up.
How does that make you feel? I would imagine it's very frustrating, the not knowing.
It's scary. It's a scary place to be, because I think I've never been, you know, I keep saying to people when I go into the consultants, because, you know, there's another scary thing. And I think sometimes they need to realise that they need to hear you, you know, like, I mean, in a situation that, you know, that when they can see real things, I don't think it's good enough to sort of say, oh, well, you know, it probably isn't, or it probably isn't, you know, like those things, because they don't help. All I want to do is want to feel better. And after nearly 2 years or a year and three quarters of not feeling well, I want to know when I'm going to feel better, if better at all. And you start to lose hope after a while. You start to lose the fact that, you know, I'm never going to be my old self. I'm never going to feel that way again. And that's scary. I mean,
do you believe that?
Sadly, I kind of do now.
Do you?
I do, because it's as if, that's when I say God's waiting room, is as if I'll have a decent day. I'm not saying decent as in 2 years ago decent, but I'll have a decent day, and then the next day I'll feel awful. You know, so things will come back, and just when you start getting hope, it's as if somebody's putting something out and then taking it away all the time, you know. I don't know. You know, I mean, I've still got a you know, a few alarming, I suppose, tests coming up and that to kind of hopefully rule things out. But it's frightening when you go into those situations before. And I, you know, as much as anybody tells you from their perspective what it's not likely to be, that's not you. That's not that. I've so much sympathy for people going through things now, because everybody can stand, while their life is going on okay, they can always stand back and say, oh, look, you know, it's not going to be that. Or the other one, oh, you know, you just have to get on with it or deal with it and that. You know, that's not the way people feel when they're going through problem areas. And, yeah. You know, there's a lot of people out there now that are going through things, you know, before people probably knew that I had my own problems. I was contacted because of my mental health training. I was contacted by a lot of people going through periods of anxiety, periods of depression, suicidal thoughts, all those things over COVID. Mm. And yet we're told the same thing by other people. Oh, you'll be fine. You know, like, you'll get another job. You know, you'll find another partner. But look, some people don't, or some people feel lost. And we're only starting to see, I think, that kind of iceberg of mental health problems after COVID, because yeah. We're only starting to see people finding it very difficult to go back to work. What does the new norm look like for them? You know, they may have spent so much time with their partner that they're not in love anymore. You know, like, all these things are coming into play now as people are going back to normal. Some people are rushing back to normality and saying, fantastic, back in at work. You know, can't wait to see people, can't wait to make new friends or new starts. Other people, that's incredibly scary for them.
Yeah.
You know, and they need to be nursed along in the appropriate manner, because, and as some woman described it to me over the phone, I was trying to sort of counsel her, I suppose, she just said, Brent, she said, going back to work now for me after a year and a half is like my first day at school. She said, I don't make friends very easily, and it took me a long time to make friends in my work, and now those people have moved on. I don't know who I'm going to be working with. And that's awkward. And people that are confident in their lives can turn that around and say, oh, you'll be fine. You know, you make friends and that. But for some people...
I hear you. Yeah. And I know people who are struggling with that idea of having worked at home for so long, now kind of going back. They don't want to go back.
No.
And it's because of new life. Yeah, exactly. And it's the anxiety it brings. And I think a lot of people, even if... there were obviously people who had struggles with anxiety or other mental health issues pre-COVID, and then it kind of magnified it. But then there are people who didn't, who started to feel anxious and never felt it before. So, as you said, it's now, for the past year and a half, it's been needed. But really now, it's when we're coming out the apparent other side of this, that people need more help than ever adjusting to life again.
Yeah,
and
because
that
life's
not
the
case.
Same.
Life's not the same. And this kind of bounce back ability, some people have it, others don't. And I think most of us, if we're truly honest, are probably struggling in one way or another because it has been such a challenge. You know, I'm listening to you there, Brent, and you're such a brilliant, fluid speaker. You're so incredibly open and giving. No, it's an amazing quality, and I admire you massively, and I know so many people do.
Thank you.
Because when you're in it now.
Yeah.
So you're in this unknown period in your life of trying to get answers.
Yeah.
And you're sitting here talking about it, which I think shows such a huge level of selflessness about you, that because you could have very easily said, no,
a lot of people do, but the one thing, You've got to talk the talk and walk the walk, you know. So I've always been about, I went through those years too of, I suppose, having mental health difficulties and what it was to be a man and what it was to be a stereotypical rugby player in New Zealand, which was, you know, hang tough, you know, real men don't cry. All those things were always told to me, and I couldn't understand that, and I couldn't understand why I was having panic attacks and why I was having anxiety attacks and bouts of depression early on in my life. And I was scared. I was scared of being judged. I was scared of being a wimp. I couldn't go to teammates. I couldn't go to anybody. And there was no help for there. So the one thing that I do is, my life is about, and I'm not saying this as if I'm wanting to sit at God's top table or anything, but my life is about giving back some way, somehow. And if that's the way that I can do it, by saying to people, look, you know, seek out counselling, seek out someone you can talk to. Everybody's in the same boat, as you just said. You know, have a chat to your wife or to a friend or something, and say, "Hey, I'm feeling a bit scared, or I'm not feeling, you know, my old self, and you know, I think I need to go and see someone and get it sorted." Because, you know, I've seen the other end of it too. Sadly, I've lost too many colleagues, you know, including friends that you know have sadly, and I've, you know, the elephant in the room is taking their own lives. And it's got to that stage. And people can't understand. And I say to them, but anybody can be in that moment. And anybody can be in that irrational moment whereby they think that there's their only option. And I know, because I've been there. Mm. You know, I've been in that thing. And it just about brings a tear to my eye sitting now thinking how scary and how lonely that was, to be in that position where you thought that, you know, nothing else could make you feel better and that was your only option. And it can be anybody in any walk of life. And people sometimes stereotype these people that take their own lives, and they say, oh, well, you know, that person was always prone to do that. Often it's the person that's not. And often you hear people saying, but I was just out with him last week and he was in great form and he was talking about the future. And you know,
I mean, no idea.
Yeah. I mean, you know, no idea. And people come to me in tears and say, but, you know, I could have helped if I'd known. And I said, but, you know, you weren't to know, you know, what that person was going through. But a lot of the times it's an irrational, spur-of-the-moment, spontaneous action to something that if somebody just sat down with that person or was able to get to them in that intervening period and say, look, hey, it'll be okay. You know, you're not going to be judged. The help is there. You can get better. You can have great days again. Mm. And to take that away from them, because when people get trapped in that mist or that depressive episode and they think there's no way out, that's when they start thinking of doing the unforgivable, really, to a lot of people. But it's a cry for help, and they just, and I've worked with a number of people when I was dealing, you know, studying psychotherapy, and that have had suicidal tendencies in their life, and they just, it's just kind of a situation where they just feel trapped, you know, they just feel trapped in this sort of thought process that you have to break. You know, but the only way you can break that is that people reach out and have the bravery to reach out and get on the phone and say, hey, look, I'm struggling, you know, whatever it is, whether it's COVID, whether it's health, whether it's relationships, whether it's financial, just to have the bravery. I never had that. See, I never had that bravery because I thought I'd be judged. To go to another, you know, New Zealand rugby player and say, hey, I'm struggling with my mental health. Back in those days, back in the 80s, late 80s, you would have deemed to be weak, you know, you'd have been deemed to, you know, even when I reached out to doctors or whatever to get help, I envisaged that help would be one flew over the cuckoo's nest, you know, that you'd be put into a psych ward somewhere in a straitjacket and fed pills or whatever, you know, and that probably wasn't that far away from the truth in those days. But now there's help everywhere you look. But so that's part of my life, is about giving back and is about wanting people to live the best lives they can, even despite the fact that I probably can't, you know.
So you strike me as somebody who's a really good pal to other people, and you're the guy that maybe, you know what, I'm going through a bit of a bad patch. I might pick up the phone and chat to them.
But I don't, you see. But I would do it for them, but I don't do it for myself.
Well, I was just about to say. No. So you're that guy for other people. Yeah. But who's there for you, or who do you allow in? I mean, you're being incredibly open here. I know that. But it's one thing having a conversation with a relative stranger. But within your circle, are you good at letting the guard down and saying, okay?
I've just kind of, I suppose in a sense, the last year and a half, especially, I've sort of dropped off the scene, really, you know, because I feel all those things that you feel. I feel that I'm a burden, you know. I feel that people don't want to know my problems, or people have got their own problems. So I probably shy away from that. So I'm probably that person that says everything is grand when it's not, you know. And this has really taken the wind out of my sails in a lot of ways, you know, having to deal with something physically, because again, you're trapped in a big loop, which is physical, mental, physical, mental. You know, like when you're not having a good day, and you don't know that the next day is going to be any better, It was like, it wears you down.
Yeah.
And, you know, being away from my family, my mother's in a home now, so I wasn't able to get home and see her and my brother, you know, and I've only one brother. Mm. So that's been hard, because the phone, you know, even though he's loving and supportive and he works in mental health himself, he's a psychotherapist himself. So we obviously had some, you know, some sort of genetic drawing to that sort of thing. So
you've trained. You're actually a qualified psychotherapist.
Yes, it just wasn't for me.
Okay.
I did the training and I did the hours. You know, people in the trade will know what I'm talking about. There was too much counter transference for me. So if I was talking to someone, I couldn't leave it. I just couldn't leave it alone.
Mm. You take it home with you.
Yes, and people would text me or something late at night or something like that. And I'd be up all night. You know, worried. I remember going to the World Cup in Japan and the Rugby World Cup, and I remember a guy that was in a bit of trouble texting me. He was actually over there, and I was running around thinking, my God, what can I do? You know, how can I get him help in Japan? How can I, you know? So I took on all that responsibility, and that. You've got to be able to sit neutrally, in a sense, and not get drawn into, you know. So if somebody came and started talking about their upbringings, it would transfer to mine. And so it would be me trying to say, hold on, this person is an individual, you know, it's not all tangled up. So I really decided then and there that unless I could get that right, then I probably wasn't, you know, best placed in that sort of one-on-one space. Yes, talking to groups of people about mental health and especially young people or sports people, fine, perfect for me. But one-on-one counselling when it gets a bit, I suppose, close to the bone was tough. But
would that be a reflection of the kind of person you are in the sense that, say, if somebody you know is in trouble, will you be going out of your way kind of to help them out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, always have. I mean, always have, but I mean, I don't, I fulfill that perfect storm that you said before, that, you know, I'll do anything to help somebody else, but I won't reach out for them to help me, you know, to a certain degree, you know. Now, there have been a certain number of people that have been really kind to me over this period and really good to talk to, but you've got to handpick them, and that's when I said about choosing who you decide to talk to about these things, because it might not necessarily be the closest person in your life. It might not necessarily be your wife or your partner or your father and your mother. It may be just someone that you feel that you can open up to, because as a male, it's often not going to be your mates, you know, because you don't want to start a conversation down the pub with, hey guys, my life's a mess. Because they'll do the old Irish thing or the old Kiwi thing. They say, you'll be grand. You know, have another pint. You know, she'll be right. You know.
Yeah, because they're uncomfortable with it.
Yeah, because they're uncomfortable with it. So you've got to find someone. My advice to someone is find someone, anyone.
Yeah.
That, you know, and if it's easier doing it anonymously, if it's easier ringing a hotline, if it's easier going in and seeing a counsellor or something like that, then those are the steps you should make. Because you read all this, you read all these booklets and that, and they say, you know, talk to your husband or talk to your wife or something. No, sometimes people can't find that too difficult because it shows weakness. So they'd rather be, my steps usually are like, you know, if you can't do that, then find a hotline or something like that you can ring anonymously. And then the next step is maybe seeking a counsellor or something like that. Do it in small steps, easy steps that you can manage. And that can be hidden away.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, you know, again, you just hear stories. When you're working in that industry, you hear so many stories that seem so innocuous to you, and you can't see that you're talking to somebody across the table and they're telling you that their life isn't worth living because they've lost a silly job, you know, and they can't go back and tell their wife, and they're running about this lifestyle. I remember one guy that was, you know, obviously don't mention any names, but was obviously a successful guy financially. Mm. And he lost some investments, and he just came in a really, really bad state to me, and he was just saying, look, Brent, you know, I can't tell my children, they wouldn't love me, respect me, my wife wouldn't love me if I told them I've lost my job or I've lost something like that. And he said, I don't know what to do, and he said, you know, I'm scared, and I just saw this guy that you just felt like shaking and saying, hey, it's only a job, or it's only a property or something like that. But you had to realise that for him, that was so important, you know, for him. So everybody has their own sort of, I suppose, worries and concerns. And
fear of rejection,
yeah,
I suppose.
Well, that's another one. And what a lot of people do is trivialise it, you know, say, look, okay, because they take their own self and say, look, that wouldn't be worrying me.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be worrying me, you know. It's the same as somebody in a relationship or something that isn't working out. Other people say, oh, just, you know, move on and find someone else. But for a lot of people, that's not that easy.
And we can see it in other people. Like, I'm sure people say it to you. If you're concerned about, we all have our own vulnerabilities. And then people would say, but you're this, you're that, you're the other. But maybe if you're not in that place, you can't see it for yourself.
You can't see it for yourself.
And it's difficult. You're good at giving help. You're there for people. Can you accept it for yourself? Are you good at
no.
Yeah.
Self-love? No. Terrible at it.
And if somebody within your circle was to want to help you, how would you react to that?
I find it very hard to get in with me, and I'm sorry for that. You know, I'm sorry for that for them, and I'm sorry for me as well, because I think one thing that we've shown over COVID is that you can count your really good friends on one hand. And boy, have I really believed that over the last couple of years as well. And I'm sure other people will be nodding their head when they listen to that, because it's usually family and a few good friends. And if you can have family and you can have a couple of friends that you can go to and help to, then that's enough. Because you and me are both the same in some regards. You're kind of, we're media figures, and you can walk out in the street, just walking around the Temple Bar before I come to it. The number of people that said hello to me, and they call me Popey, which is lovely.
Then it may be
anybody from the guy working the trucks over there to people in the shops and stuff like that, and that's lovely. But they don't really know you.
Sure.
You know, they think they know you, but. And so you've always got to have a side out there that's, for me, it's always, you know, that I'm cheerful and easygoing and that. But sometimes under lock and key, I'm not. And sometimes I'm sad, and sometimes I'm scared, and sometimes I'm worried. But you have a face out there that is shown to be someone that deals with things and someone that gets on and someone that's living the good life and, you know, has all these things, all these ducks in a row. Boy, I've got so many unducks in a row. It's unbelievable. But letting people in has always been very difficult for me. You know, even in relationships and those things, letting, you know, at some stage I was burnt, and it's like touching a hot things. There's a lot of patience with me to be able to build up trust.
Romantically burnt?
No. It'd be going back to the way I felt about myself when I was young. You know, the way I felt about myself. I beat myself up. You know, in everything I do, I beat myself up. I've never felt worthy in a lot of ways. It's just, even when things happen to me now, I get all tangled up and, you know, I get all tangled up in religion and stuff like that. And I think, is this God's path for me? Or, you know, it's all a tie-in of a whole thing. But I think that I've always been front and center. In some regards, I'll say it now, in some regards, I feel to myself, I sometimes feel like, Brent, you've been a fraud all your life, because if people really knew you, that's why I wrote my book, If You Really Knew Me, because if people really knew me, I wasn't always that confident kid or that teen joke or that person in the rugby team that was, oh, Popey's not worried about that, you know, like he's the guy to go to, like he's always upbeat and cheerful and cracking jokes down the back of the bus and the class clown and But yet I was going through so many problem areas when I was young and masking it. You know, that's what I call it, masking it. You know, the tears of a clown. Like, you know, I was going through horrific days where I just locked myself away from my world. And then was kind of just told to sort of suck it up and get on with it. So then I would go back into that other person, which was kind of the person that's easygoing and happy and, you know, yeah, water off a duck's back. But that's not really, at times, that's not the true me. And I'm sure it's the same for you or anybody else. You know,
we
all put out a face out there that we think that other people like. And
yes, I think regardless of what we do for a living, I think we all have that where, you know, you put on different hats, don't you?
You do. And I mean, just on the thing, I mean, see, I'm very, now it's by choice, and it's by choice, and I'm not going to sit here and say that it's not, but I've really missed, I suppose, these last couple of years. Sorry, I just get sort of upset when I talk about of having someone in my life, a partner or something, to go through things with, you know. Mm. It's tough going to consultants' appointments or being in hospital and that, and when your family's on the other side of the world, and it's tough not having someone there to hold your hand and go through it with you together and say, look, whatever this is, we'll go through it together. And you know, so you can feel quite alone, and that's no just I have, you know, I've friends that will come with me, and you know, I've asked a friend to come to me with me the next appointment because it's quite a scary one for me, and just to come there and just be there because, you know, just, you know, not in the room, but just be out there because, you know,
yeah,
it's important to. But I can see the value and strength from people, you know, doing things together, and it's really spurred me on. I'm, and it's something I might come back and talk to you about later. I'm gonna set up a little kind of charity myself around sports people that want. I'm gonna call it Support Sport, and people that were well known in the media or sport or something would just go and talk to someone that was maybe suffering from loneliness or terminal illness or whatever. Because I really saw the value in people that are alone, you know, talking to people. And yeah, I think that sports people and stuff like that and media people have that ability to touch people's lives. And where that came about was a couple of years ago, sadly, I had a friend who was a social worker, Melda Keown, and, you know, they often say the good people are taken, you know, and she was a phenomenal worker for other people. And she rang me one time, she said, Brent, she said, there's a rugby fan down here, sadly he's passing away and he's only got a couple of months left, but he'd love to meet you because he's a big fan and he's loved rugby all his life and he's in his 50s. And my first thought was, what do I do? What can I say to this man? And then I rejigged that and I thought, well, it's not about me. It's not about me. So I plucked up the courage and, you know, and I went down there and I sat with this man and we laughed and we cried. And And his wife sent a lovely note after that to say what that hour or two spent with Brent Pope had meant to her husband. And I just thought, wow,
yeah,
you know, if we've the ability, and I'm talking, you know, people like you and I, and if we've that ability to touch somebody's life like that. And when I was in hospital there, even in you know, about a year ago when I was hospital there for a woman came up to me and just said, and she was in the oncology ward, and she just said, Brent, she said, I'm a huge Munster fan. She said, I would have loved to have met Paul O'Connell in my life. I really loved that man. And I thought, I could have done that. Mm. You know, I could have facilitated that. I could have set something up. I know Paul well. I could have rung him and said, look, hey, if you're passing, there's this lady that would love to see you and meet you and spend 5 minutes, whether it's a call, whether it's a card. I don't know what that is. So I'm determined to sort of set something up that people could go, not a red carpet, not roll out the red carpet and have photographers there, sure, and say, yeah, okay, you know, somebody's visiting the wing or something like that. No, I just mean somebody that would call in after training one night, especially from GAA. I mean, GAA are great at that, you know.
Yeah.
Call in to see somebody that maybe has been widowed or something that's living out in the country, like you're from the country like me, and, you know, there's plenty of people out there that are living lonely life, farmers or whatever, and that, and GAA has been part of their life or their fabric. And we even know, you know, there's people that talked about being able to go down to the pub and that and having a few drinks or the GAA and stuff. Think it's part of their life. And suddenly if they get widowed or something, or in a lonely place, and for somebody to call down, that, you know, just call down and say, "Hey, you, John, you know, how you getting on? There's a couple of free tickets to this week's match." Or, and also from the other side of it, I was talking to a couple of GAA players in particular, and they said, actually, Brent, it would be good for us too, because we've recently retired and we don't get that, you know, going into Croke Park with 80 or 90,000 people, and suddenly, you know, if you know it from your Mayo background, suddenly those people that come back and are maybe going to retire and not be on another Mayo team,
yeah,
you know, that can, that, that's affecting them mentally. You know, they get back on that money, and yes, the crowds are there saying, "Well done, guys, you're brave," and that, but then they sit down with their hands in their heads and say, "Opportunity missed. I might not get another opportunity. These are the harsh realities of sports. I might not be on the panel next year, even if we get to the final." You know, and those things affect people's mental health as well.
It sounds like something that would really benefit the person who reaches out or is looking for that connection, but also for the person providing it. So, and again, I think it says a lot about you. And I'm a big believer in the most important thing in this, in the world, whatever this living of a life is all about. But it's the impact you have on people. That's, for me, that's it.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it?
That's it.
But that's a wonderful thing to say. And not as many people say that as you think. People, by and large, lead their own lives. And some people, I say it now, and some people lead selfish lives. It's about what they can get, when they can get it. And yes, they may have the house on the hill and the flash cars and the trophy partner and all that, but what have they given back? You know, what has been that purpose? And you make a good point, because the last couple of years I've really had to search and say, well, what is my purpose? You know, what can I leave? You know, I don't want to be talking about legacies and stuff like that, but it does cross your mind, and you do think, what can I do to make this a better place for everybody, you know, depending on how long you've gotten. None of us know, at the end of the day, we don't know. And it's easy to be flippant about that and say, oh, well, you know, it's not going to happen to, you know, people aren't going to pass away in COVID. People aren't going to pass away with cancers or other things. They do, you know, and you take a close look and say, hey, you know, we're never too far away from sort of being fallible or being here. Yeah. We're never too far away, but, you know. And suddenly when people get thrown into that situation where they start having to look at their lives and say what's important or what's not, it's a good thing.
Can I go back to what you were saying earlier about, you know, sometimes feeling like you're not worthy or not feeling enough? And I think that's something that a lot of people connect with. I think we struggle sometimes to say it, and it's certainly something that I speak about myself, because I you know, it's that classic imposter syndrome and not feeling like you're good enough for whatever the situation is, and a lot of people do feel that way. Have you discovered in your many years of I suppose delving deep and training and different things, where that comes from?
I have a pretty good idea where it comes from. I think it's probably, you know,
it might be too personal to ask.
It probably is, but it stems from a lack of belief in myself, and again feeling like, you know, I suppose a rolling stone, you know. But say in this case, a rolling stone gathers moss. You know, it's a sense that if from an early age you always felt inadequate for whatever reason, whether it was a teacher at school told you, whether it was somebody in your life, whether it was rejection. You know, see, we're not the first people that carry things from our youth on. A lot of people do, and a lot of people, when you go back, in fact, there's a great. Thing people look into sometimes, which is schema therapy. And it really, when you read a book around schemas, what it is really that we're all somewhat programmed to act in a certain way, and that unless that that same person that acts in a certain way around relationships or around finances or whatever like that was always going to be that way unless he broke that chain or she broke that chain, if you know what I mean. You know, it's the same as people that go back to partners that maybe have abused them because they just think that they're not worthy of a relationship. And you get that quite often. You say to especially a woman, look, you know, why do you think that you love somebody that is hitting you or abusing you? And they'll come back, because he's the only one that ever loved me, or he's the only one that's ever worked. And that is hard to take. And most people would start there and stand on their pedestal or whatever and say, just leave this man or leave this woman or get out of that relationship. And yes, that should be the easiest thing to do, but it's not.
Yeah.
And I mean, we all know friends out there, we all know friends that are stuck in relationships that are not good for them. But you can't tell them.
Yeah.
And it's always people that say, oh, look, should I tell my friend this, that, and the other? And I say, be very wary, because you'll suddenly be ostracized to the extent that, oh, well, my best friend and I saw something, and should I tell my friend? Yes, in principle. Yes, in principle, if you're a friend, you should. But it's a thin line to you've got to be prepared to maybe lose that friendship, unfortunately, because people don't like being told what to do or how to do it, because they go back to learnings they've had all their life. If you've always been rejected in love, or always felt inadequate, somebody comes along and gives you that love periodically, you're going to run to it. You're going to embrace it, and you're going to say, this is the most wonderful thing, because somebody actually loves me, flaws and all. But sooner or later, it creeps in. Then, he'll leave or she'll leave, or, you know. And for a long time, I'll be honest here, for a long time, my relationships broke down because I would think, you know, even though I've got a lot of wonderful qualities, and I don't say that in a bragging way, but I've had to say that to myself I am a kind person. I do have qualities of generosity and these things, which is I like about myself the most. But I would often think, unbeknownst to them, I would often think, you know, what are they doing with me? You know, once they see the real me, that's not the media me or whatever, then they won't love me and they'll leave me. And subsequently, I probably self-sabotaged relationships on that basis. I probably formed an argument or formulated a situation where I said, look, okay, you know, you want to get married, I'm not sure about that, or whatever, or you want children, I'm not sure about that, and they would leave the relationship. And that's come with a lot of regret. You know, I've met some wonderful people in my life and that I could have spent wonderful time with.
Yes.
And I self-sabotage. And now I'm at an age whereby, you know, there's a sense of loneliness. I don't choose to be a bachelor. You know, I am. And that's the other thing that annoys me, when people say, oh, you know, he's a bachelor. I hate that word.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I just hate that word, bachelor.
What
does it mean? Because what it means to people on the outside is somebody that probably drives flash cars and is out and about and having the life of Riley and wants to be single. But that's not me, and it's not a lot of other people.
You know,
it's not.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. and they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Do you still have hope? In terms of meeting somebody romantically?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm probably not in the right place now, but I mean, again, I've got to believe, as you just said before, good advice. I've got to believe that, you know, there'll be more better days than there will be not so great days, and that, you know, and that this actually is a launch pad. I was talking about that charity. Is a launch pad to do other things. Mm. You know, there's some good that's come. There's some silver linings. I mean, in fact, there's massive silver linings. You know, there's silver linings about how I want to live my life from this point on. You know, in a sense of what is important and what is not, and a sense of yourself of being someone that says, okay, yes, I would welcome that sort of, I suppose, love of my life. I've got to take another look at my, I suppose, my religious feelings. You know, that's another, I have to have another close look about my relationship with God, or, you know.
Do you mind me asking about that in the sense of?
Well, I was brought up a strict Catholic, you know, yeah, to such an extent of sort of altar boy and all those things. I probably strayed from the faith in a sense of attending church every week or whatever like that. And I was probably like everybody else. I selfishly dipped into God when I needed that sort of, I suppose, reassurance or whatever. You know, I'd go down and get on hands and knees and say, you know, God, you know, let my father or mother or brother get through this, or let me score the winning try in a rugby match, you know, as much as any significance. So I always had a faith. I had a glimmering faith there, but I didn't have, my father had a deep faith and my mother has a strong faith. I'm not as strong as that, but I want to believe. I want to believe what I've always believed. I've always believed that if I live my life according to what I think, how I think God would want it to, is that convenient or is it a way of looking at it? You know, in the sense of, you know, I've never set out to ever hurt anybody intentionally in anything I've done in my life. I'm a kind person. I work in God's ways, a lot of things. Is that enough or not? I don't know. I mean, you know.
Did being a Catholic influence your decisions through the years?
Yeah, absolutely.
And are you comfortable with those decisions that were made, or do you kind of look back going, maybe things could have been different?
Maybe things could have been different.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
You know, because I think when I say, you know, I'm a generation probably over and above yourself, but the Catholic faith has struggled to, I suppose, meet the demands of new generations. And, you know, it's been hard sometimes because I can see why my parents' generations had great faith, you know, because you went to church every week and, you know, it was part of the fabric, you know, it was part of your society fabric that the priest would call out. Even, you know, when my mother couldn't go to church anymore a couple of years ago, the priest would come out and say mass out in the house or whatever. It's just that I had to have a look at my religious sort of, how I felt about it.
Yeah.
Like my brother actually was going to go into the priesthood at one stage. So our faith was strong.
Yeah.
My family. And I feel that I probably let Dad down in the sense that, you know, that I would argue about him about faith, and he just had an unwavering love of God and what happens next, and, you know. So I've had to have a look at that as well. You know, I've had to have a look at, you know, how can I kind of reflame that in a sense?
Yeah.
You know? And I think it's, I would like to have more faith. I would.
You're really in it. I feel from you that you're in such a reflective phase in your life because you're being faced with a lot of challenge to deal with. That is probably forcing you to.
Absolutely.
It's your choice whether you actually look at it or not, but you're making that choice to actually examine and kind of go, what's going to happen now, or where am I going to go to next? You know, as you said, Ireland has been your home for nearly 30 years.
Yeah, 30 years.
Yeah.
So
will it continue to be?
Yeah, I would like to think so. Okay. I wouldn't find it easy going back to New Zealand.
Is Ireland home?
Well, I can never say that because I don't know what's coming, what happens, you know.
Sure.
One thing, again, I've decided I need to spend more time in New Zealand each year. If I can do that, hopefully I can do that, manage that, you know, because, you know, it's easier to do that when you're on your own, to go out and spend more time. Because, again, you know, my brother and I, you know, we're blood and we only have each other, and we haven't seen each other's lives, you know, and in a sense, and that is a huge regret. It's not like you come from a big family, you know. I come from a small family. There's one brother. My father is gone. My mother, you know, like, she's, you know, in a home now, so we don't know how long she has, you know. So you've only one family, you know.
And your brother, I think, am I right in thinking, like you, not married, doesn't have kids?
No, not married, doesn't have kids. In fact, none of my... Only one of my mother's sisters, she's three sisters or something, and they've each had two children, one of each, two girls and a boy and a girl. Only one of them has had children, you know, of those six kind of things. So I know, and that's another thing, you know, I know my family name ends in my generation, you know, like, who's there to carry on? You know, who's there to carry on the sort of Pope name? Nobody, you know. And it's I suppose it's what you believe, where the memories in that last generation's and that, I don't know, you know, because, you know, that'll be a situation whereby, you know, there'll be nobody to... Yeah, I don't want to speak sort of sadly, but I mean, you know, sometimes when I'm looking at all my cuttings, rugby cuttings, I was just clearing out the attic there, and I was thinking all those rugby cuttings and that I had, and all those sort of jerseys and all those, you know, and I've got five or six scrapbooks full of things I did, not just in rugby field, writing books and doing things like that. And I thought, who gets to see those, you know, in a reflective mode? Like, who gets to see them? Who, most people, like, you know yourself, you pass that on to your children. You know, you pass that on to the next generation, or say, hey, mum did this or whatever. Mum was on TV, or mum did this shows, and look at this, and it's a gas. Like, you know, who gets all that stuff, you know, for me? You know, who be boxed up and sent back to my brother or something like that should, you know, something happen, you know? And I don't want to come across, like, you've sort of caught me at a good or a bad moment, you know, in a sense that, yes, the silver linings are a reflection on the way I want to continue to give back and how I can give back more, and re-examining my faith and looking at my love life and looking at all those things and my family life, and I'd make a good father, be it a stepfather. Yes, those are the silver linings. You know, the negative side of the reflective is looking on your life and saying, okay, you know, do I get better? You know, am I faced with something that I have to make, you know, serious choices? And you know, at the moment, when I say that, I'm in a position where I don't know fully what's going on. I know there is something going on because you know your own body.
Yeah.
You know, so it's the journey continues.
And I won't patronise you by doing the Irish thing of, oh, but you're grand and sure, you know, don't you have this, that and the other to be thankful for and all the rest?
No, because I don't feel that way.
What you said there was very powerful about, like, who gets these scrapbooks, where does that go? But then on the other side of it, the constant connection that you have with people within your own circle and the general public, the people who will listen to this conversation, Brent, who will be listening and hanging on to your every word because
they're in the same spot,
or
they finally realize, hey, it's not a perfect world and I'm not perfect.
And these are conversations we don't often have, because I do know people who are of a certain age and maybe haven't had the wife or husband or kids or whatever, and are kind of at the phase where, all right, is this it?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
These are important, healthy conversations to have.
And of course, they can't say it because what I started off all this by saying is because there's judgment all over the place.
Yeah.
Ping, ping, ping. You know, people are always out there to judge. Like, you shouldn't be feeling this way. You know, you shouldn't be acting this way. There'll be people out there say, oh, well, you know, like, this is all in his head, or this is this, the other. And fine, but you're not living my life. You know, and it's the same person that comes down there and they say, oh, he's happy being a bachelor, or, you know, he's always been that way. Hey, he might be the loneliest guy when he goes away from the club or something at night, going back to nobody, and it's not going back to kids. You can't watch kids go through college or anything like that. You know, so it's about, hey, putting the brakes on judgment a bit for everybody, and everybody to say, look, I'm going through this with you in some way, and, you know, everybody... Nobody's getting it right out there. You know, from my training, that everybody has problems. Everyone out there. Now, it can be problems that some people get. I admire people's bravery. My God, when I looked around that hospital ward and I saw those brave people that were dealing with things, you know, were dealing with horrendous news, and how they were dealing with it so bravely. And that's why I wanted to reach out and just, you know, hold their hand and say, hey, you know, there's someone here for you. Like, there's someone here for you. You don't have to be so brave. You don't have to be. So there's moments in everybody's life when they just want to say, hey, you know, I'm not actually brave. I'm not taking this news. I'm not taking this divorce, or I'm not taking this loss of a job. I'm not taking it as easy as I can, and I need help, rather than stick out their chest and say, it'll be grand. Because for a lot of people, it's not grand. And for them to know from this conversation and others like it that, you know, reach out for help and let people know that they're not alone, and let people know that you're going through this as well, because we'll strengthen numbers, you know.
Yeah, big time.
And for people to live their lives in a non-judgmental, better way. And I think that way COVID has been good for people. In a sense, it's not all been bad. It's been a situation that people have appreciated more time with their family. People have started new families, and well, you know yourself, they've seen what's really important in their lives. You know, is it spending 15 hours at work every day, or is it going home to the kids and living out of Dublin and having time kicking a ball with them out in the park, something they couldn't do? Absolutely, that's what it's about. And for people to really pick up the slack and say, hey, you know, this is what I want to do. I want to travel more. I want to make connections with people. I want to give back. I want to do charity work. I want to go back to college. I want to fulfill all those things that I wanted to do. Maybe now's the time to do it.
At the beginning of the conversation, you did mention that you had your own theory as to why you were unwell. Now, we're not going to get into it because you've told me privately what you feel that is. But effectively, for people who are listening, maybe going, I don't really get that. Effectively, you feel that you were prescribed a drug that we won't name that has led to a whole heap of issues.
Absolutely.
And I think it's an important message, and it's not demonizing the medical profession, because I think at the end of the day, you know, I think we both share a respect for for medicine and for doctors, nurses.
The timing's just too coincidental, you know, but it's not going to stop here. I don't believe, because it's just a situation that. Firstly, you're right. I mean, I have huge respect for the medical profession, and the people that are looking after me have been fantastic, and I can't talk more highly about them. My disappointment is being put on a medication that I didn't feel in retrospect that I needed to be put on. And whatever chances are small, and whatever trying to mention it to people and saying, okay, that it probably wouldn't be that or whatever, I just believe that my body has had a systematic reaction to this drug, and it's really thrown all systems down, because I can't sleep anymore. I was the world's best sleeper you know, 2 years ago, I'd go off to bed at 9:30 or 10, wouldn't wake up till 7. Now I maybe wake 10 times a night. I can't get sleep. The proof is in the pudding of scans and that. I've had so many scans and capsule scans and colonoscopies and all that, and to be told, okay, there's some reaction or this severe reaction to something. We just don't know what it is. From the gastro point of view, I'm being told that it's a severe chemical reaction to something. And when I talk about that, I've not been on any other medication. Then to have problems, having my liver looked at, and that's another thing that everybody should do actually. But the fibroscan or liver biopsies for your liver to be sort of for your sleep, for your liver, for your nervous system. Like I'm covered in twitches now, you know, full time, 24, like parts of my body will be twitching, which is unusual. Okay. Central nervous thing. So it's like a systematic attack on my body. It's like either immune response, autoimmune response. But like there's not a day I don't get up and I feel, you know, I'm just not myself. And there'll be days where it'll be worse. There'll be days when I can't eat anything. It's too painful for me. There'll be other days where it's not as bad. But I know one thing, and you said hope. I just know deep down, and I suppose it's negative thinking. It's just gone on too long now to think myself well. I mean, so many people have said, oh, well, believe you will be better. And after a while, you give up hope of only being. My hope is that, touch wood, and pray to God that it's something manageable for me and it gets easier for me over time. That's my hope.
Is the waiting for answers the scariest part of this?
Waiting for answers is very scary. Mm. It's very scary because you go to doctors with specific sets of symptoms. And I'm not a hypochondriac.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's not like I've been in and out of doctor's rooms all my life. So it's not like sometimes, I mean, please don't tell people in the medical profession that something is in their head or psychosomatic, because people know when they're going there that it's real for them. And there'll be a lot of people out there now when they hear that jumping and punching the air saying, my God. But to go along to the doctors or whatever with a problem and be sometimes said, oh, well, it's anxiety, it's stress or whatever. And yes, I know they can do, you know, incredible damage to your body. And over a long period of time, I get that. But
don't dismiss.
No, because you're right. Because when you go with a specific set of symptoms and you're given, you know, some reassurance until something else happens, and then you've got to go along. And I've had to do it with my liver, I've had to do it with my stomach, I've had to do it with my sleep pattern, I've had to do it with my nervous system, and so I've had to see different consultants in different areas. It's not just one thing. It's not like okay. And yes, It's great news when they come back and they say, look, we can see with damage done, but they've had meetings with consultants and that, tried to work out what is wrong, and have seen things that are wrong, and have tried to sit down and say, look, what could it be? And I've been on various other medications, you know, whether it's steroids or whatever. I've seen, functional medicine people.
Yeah.
But the hardest thing for me to accept is if it is due to a medication, then I'm responsible. And boy, that's hard. That's like saying, you know, that's the hardest thing to get over for me mentally.
But then
I'm not. I know. But
you were prescribed it. If
I know.
That's the case.
I was given it.
You weren't forced to take it.
No, I was flipped away. I was flipped away that this is a safe drug and there'll be no problems. Don't worry about it. You know, no worries. And bang! About 2 or 3 weeks into that drug, I started getting the problems that have stopped. And then when I did more research on this medication, boy, you know, I saw that it can create permanent problems, you know, for some people. Unlucky, yes, unlucky, because, you know, a lot of people take it, and unlucky, and I've just had a reaction. But I was in fine form, and I was enjoying COVID, and in fact, as much as anybody could, because it gave me time off from a lot of other work that I was doing, and I was busy painting the house, and I was out, and people were saying, you know, how fit and healthy I was looking, and I felt fit and healthy. And then to go from there to bang, you know, to losing, you know, 2 stone in a couple of weeks, to not knowing what was going on, to, you know, vomiting, to having blood, like, it just doesn't make sense. You know, for a while I thought it was COVID.
Mm.
You know, for a while I thought it was, but I was tested for COVID. But
do you believe your body is working towards health and healing?
I'd like to think so. I'd like to think so, because the hope that I have is that I have better days now than I had certainly a year and a half ago. I have better days.
Okay.
I'm still not perfect. Like my stomach is still sore.
Okay.
And I'm still not getting the sleep and stuff like that. But that may never come back. You know, that might not.
I suppose you can only deal with what you know right now.
What I know right now, and it's getting over. It's slowly getting over each individual hurdle, because when you're wheeled in for scopes and stuff like that, there's always a fear in the back of your mind that, you know, like what are they coming back with you? You know, and that's where. You know, something resonates with me, because when I was getting tests done there around my liver there, you know, about a year ago or whatever, I was, you know, push you down the wheelchair to the MRI or the CT scanner or whatever like that, and I was just facing a woman there, and she was saying, I said, I'm just having my liver scanned or whatever like that, and she said, yeah, she said, unfortunately, she said, I'm in the same boat. She said, they found lesions on my liver and stuff. And I just sort of thought, just at that moment, I thought, that could be me. You know, like I could be the other person on that, you know. I'm just going in, and it wasn't sharing hard luck stories. It was just, that was the reality of somebody being, you know, plunged into that situation. That's when I started off saying, I feel at the moment, till I get these current batches of tests, you know, out of the way, that I feel that I've been in the waiting room for a year and a half, because how I feel. I think I've,
yeah.
And I say, and it's not. I could understand if I was a hypochondriac. I can understand. I mean, when I first went to the doctor, I said, but I don't even have a regular doctor. I said, I haven't spent a night in hospital for 50 years.
Okay.
For 50 years. It wasn't as if I was going in and saying, oh, well, I think it's cancer or anything like that. You know, I wasn't. And so people can sit out there and judge again all they like and say, what's he going to do? You know, but I've heard so many people along that journey that have been in similar situations to me and have gone and their news hasn't been good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that scares you, because you're in the unknown. I mean,
and it's easy for me to say, you know, you can't think that way, you know,
yeah,
blah blah blah. Oh. But I also know what it's like to be faced with illness, and
well, yeah,
it's
you
bloody
go in.
Scary.
Well, you know, you've been through that.
Yeah, and it's scary. And when you're in it, it is. You know, you're managing a lot. You're trying to manage the physical and the mental stuff that comes up for you, and then how it impacts you emotionally and in every way. So,
You went through that. I mean, you went through that, not knowing and being scared every time you go down. Is this worse than you thought? Is this better than you thought? You know, and people are dealing with that all the time, and you know, and that has an impact on your mental health. It has to.
Of course it does. Of course it does. Yeah.
Because not everybody walks in bravely and says, "Hey, I'll deal with what they give me." There are some people like that, and I admire those people like that. But there's not many.
Yeah.
There's not many that walk in and say, and somebody says, "Okay, well, you've got, you know, you've got bowel cancer or you've got prostate cancer or something, and then march out and say, yes, people say, I'm going to fight it. Absolutely. I'm all up for the fight, whatever I have or I don't have. But it's that period of uncertainty that rocks you, you know, that period of, okay, I'm not getting better. What are we dealing with? Please tell me we're dealing with something that you can give me, say, okay, this will come right. You know, at some stage, it might take 2 years, it might take 3 years, it might take 4 years, whatever that is. But it's damned hard when you're being told to go off and see somebody else now and being told maybe, look, wait another 6 months and we'll be back in for another biopsy or another scan or whatever that. You know, what do they expect people to go away for that 6 months? And you know, and you, it's hard to get better. It's hard to feel better when each thing is stretched out.
And you don't have answers.
Okay, Brent, you know, if it's another 6 months and symptoms haven't got worse, you know, we can look at more positively and stuff like that. But that's a waiting period of 6 months, and it's a long time.
In an ideal scenario, from now,
yep.
You know, and you know, say you get answers, yep. it's something manageable, mm. and that you can yep. heal from, move on yep. from. Like, if you were to kind of picture yourself in 10, 20 years' time, yep. and you know, back to a good level yep. of health where you are sleeping through yep. the night and you're feeling good, what would your life look like, do you think, in an ideal situation?
It'd look a lot different, and that's what I say about the silver linings. And I don't want this to be a morbid conversation in that sense, and people are probably going to take that. And I've been kind of, you know, I've been told by some circles, you know, don't air your dirty laundry, so to speak, you know. So there's some thoughts of me about, oh, well, you know, woe is me. And I don't want that to be the case.
I think people will see you as gutsy and...
Just saying, like, this is the way it is.
And look, this is what this podcast is about. It's about people being real, and you are.
Yeah, and I'm not going to lie to myself or lie to other people out there and say, look, I'm handling this well. I'm not handling it well, and I'm scared and... At times I feel frightened, like every natural reaction. So I'm not going to stand up on a pedestal and say, you know, life is great and everything's going to be okay and everything's going to be brilliant, because that's just not the way I feel. And yes, I could mask it by saying, oh, I'm grand, or, you know, there'll be better days. And hopefully there is. And I'm keeping that on the back of the shelf too. But I mean, part of my mental, I suppose, vulnerability is that, you know, it was like somebody saying, I've got to say, you know, you're not going to live inside my hint rent-free, which was a great thing said, like, because part of my psyche, part of the way that I've always dealt with things is that most of my life in regards school, scholastically, sporting-wise, relationship-wise, health-wise, four of those before the health wise was glass half empty. You know, that was just, unfortunately, that's what I was just blessed with, that I was, you know, that something's going to go wrong. It's going to go wrong to me. You know, I'm going to miss out on the All Blacks with injury, and which I did. And this was God's message to me for some reason. You know, it was like, you know, you're never going to make it. You know, you're never going to pass this exam. You're never going to find, you know, someone that loves you. You'll never. And people can sit out there and say, oh, you know, just be more positive. But I got sick of going and hearing those American people that, you know, we can walk on coals and come on, take control of your life and all that, because it just wasn't realistic to me. I couldn't change the way I was deep down, the type of person I was. The type of person I was cautious, negative thinking, yes, not all the time. Certainly not about my health. You know, my health was the one thing that I always said, okay, well, I'm healthy. And, you know, I was born a very sickly child, and I shouldn't have even lived my first couple of years. So I always look back on that and say, you know, from a religious point of view, something my mother said to me, she said, Brent, you know, you're always destined to do something with your life, because you shouldn't have been here. But And that's always resonated with me, but it still goes back to what I want my life to look like, you know, now, is that I want these changes to be positive in my life and to live the life that I've set out here. That means, how does it look in 20 years? It means being happy with someone, either part of a family or not being alone. I don't picture myself, you know, being alone in some place, you know, doesn't matter where it is around the world or whatever. I don't picture myself being alone in my life.
Great.
I picture being with someone and maybe being a part of somebody else's family, be it a stepdad or whatever, something like that. It looks like helping out in the community in a way, even if it's, you know, I'd love to open up an art gallery for disadvantaged artists, or I'd love to do that, you know, charity work or give back or something involved in that, and really just, I suppose, enjoying my life, have more faith, you know, and that's it. So a nice mix of a happy, balanced person that's loving life and not looking back in life and regrets. And I think I can handle that now. I can handle. All I'm saying here now, and it upsets me to say, it's just saying, please, God, give me another 20 years, you know.
Yeah.
And that, you know, again, you can see them visibly upset about that. But yeah. I want that life. I want that life. I want to be able to look back and say, these moments when I was most vulnerable and most scared and most, you know, that something good came of it, and something allowed me to change my life and for the positive, and, you know, make those changes, and God willing that I look up to the heavens at an age and say I've had a full and wonderful life. And I think, isn't that what everybody wants, really, to look back and say, at any age, hopefully, fingers crossed, at an older age, but still at any age, to say, look, I've had a, and that's where I see real bravery in people. That's where I see talking to those people we talked about before, about getting something back from people that are in a situation like that. It's people that I talk to that look you straight in the eye and say, Brent, I've had a wonderful life.
Yeah.
You know, I've had wonderful relationships. I've brought up wonderful children, and I've got grandchildren and that. And, you know, and I've got a great faith, and I admire those people so much.
I know it's irrelevant what I think, but listening to you speak there, I'm actually delighted to hear you speak that way. And I'm excited for you because I think none of us know what's around the corner. And I'm sure, you know, if we start to share different stories back and forth, there have been many times in my life where I thought life was going one direction, and then something flipped it on its head, either at the time the worst thing ever, which led me down a different path to something completely different, which may have ended up in far better than I ever would have imagined, all the rest. And I think life is full of that.
Yeah.
It's full and at different stages. And I think it's interesting listening to you speak. You said, I was. You kept using, I don't know whether you're aware of it or not, but you kept using the past tense.
Yeah.
Almost like this was the old Brent. But now where I'm at now and going forward, things will be different.
Yeah, things will be different. And I'm glad you say that, because that gives me an extra boost too. So thank you, you know, because sometimes you need to be told. And again, people like you and I, and we're very similar, you know, people like you and I get to talk to other people, but we sometimes don't get to share, you know, how we really feel about things ourselves. So you know, it's you know, and I mean, you know, what we've talked about today is raw, and, you know, hopefully people will take something inspirational out of it, because I don't do it for that reason. I just do it for the reasons that I sort of think, this is me, this is the real Brent, this is who I am, warts and all. If you don't like that, well, I'm not in a situation, I'm not that type of person that says, well, boo-hoo, you know, I don't need you. But what I'm saying is that, you know, I do see it as reasonably brave to say that you're vulnerable and to talk about your life and saying, okay, And a lot of areas I've messed up. Boy, I've messed up.
But we all have.
But we all have. Mm. Haven't we all sitting out there saying, you know, if my life had gone in a different direction. But I think what you said before is really inspirational, is that regardless of what of where life takes us, whatever road, that it could end up in a silver line.
Yeah,
you know, it could, you know, you go into a new job, you go into a new relationship, you go to a new country, whatever that is for you, that look at that journey as saying something that, okay, it's a change of direction in your life, but it also could be a good change, or it could be a wake-up call, or it could be a move to somewhere else in your life that could be good. So that's what I'm saying. I mean, if I could just get my physical health back to some way that I can be my old person, I know I'm not going to be... I know I'm not going to be the old Brent Pope I was 2 years ago, but maybe, just maybe, I can be a better version.
Yeah.
So that's when I start talking about the future and look at it positively and look at things that I want to do that I'm going to do. And hopefully I can do it with, you know, reasonably good health.
I look forward to the time we can sit down again at some stage in the future and have a very different conversation.
Yeah.
When you're in a very different place.
Yeah, and I'd love that. I'd love that side of it, because I've battled all my life.
You know,
15 years ago when I came out about my mental health, I was probably the first, in rap terms, I'm probably an original gangster, you know, in the sense that when Ryan Tubberty spoke to me maybe 15 years ago and just looked at me and said, Brent, there's something wrong with you. And I broke down. I said, there's been something wrong with me all my life. And I felt weak. And I went around the back of RT and I put my hands on my heads and I cried. And I said, my life is over in Ireland, because men won't understand. Men won't understand. And that's generally how I felt.
Did you?
Because I felt that having somebody on a rugby panel that was 6'3" and, you know, big, strong guy and stuff like that, and aggressive and all these things that I was renowned for on the rugby field, that suddenly he could be so weak as a man. I felt weak. I felt gutless. I felt that people will see through me, in the sense that they'll see, oh, well, you know, this guy isn't what he said to be. Why should he even be commentating about? I felt, why should I even be commentating about rugby when I had mental health problems? You know, and I'd hid all those things and everything just came up. It just bubbled to the surface. All my years of anxiety attacks, of feeling depressed, of feeling suicidal at those times, they all just come to the surface. And I felt scared. I felt that no one would understand. And then Ryan rang me back about an hour and a half later. I was in the supermarket thinking about moving from Ireland again and making a new start somewhere else where people didn't know me. And he said, the switchboard is lit up, Brent, with men just saying, hey, you know. And while that made me sad on a sort of a level, I think, oh, you know, these other people are going through this as well. I then realised that, you know, and he said something, he said, but you're loved, you know. And that gave me so much of a fill up at that stage, and to be able to move forward and speak to people. And now it's the done thing, you know. Now it's, you know, in fact, it's probably overdone, you know, to a certain degree, that, you know, people are, you know, every page you turn now, people have got something to say about mental health. But I think going back, coming from a person that has lived it, you know, for so long, I'm coming up 60 this year, you know, so someone that has lived with mental health problems since early teenage years and has battled on, you know, it does show resilience, and it does show, you know, getting up again and going at it again from a different way. And it does call on dark times as well to get through it and that. But I've learnt the lessons, and that's the strength I can give to somebody, that, you know, please, if you're listening to this and it's resonating with you anyway, you know, and if you listen, and it's one person that just gets on that phone and rings up somebody and says, hey, I'm not feeling so well about this situation I'm in, or I'm not feeling well about COVID, or I'm not feeling well about my physical health and my mental health is being affected, please get on the phone and talk to someone, you know, whoever it is, and get the help and move on with your life and have wonderful, fulfilling 20-year-plus lives.
Yeah.
You know, that's all I want for people, really. And it's genuine. That's what I want.
You're a gem. And, you know, a lot of this conversation has been about things like about worth and feeling worthy. And you're the one who gives all the time, giving. But, you know, there is kind of a law of nature. I'm sure you're aware of it, like the law of giving and receiving.
Yeah.
So you got to be able to give. It's important. But you got to be able to receive it,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, no, I want that.
So I hope you
that.
Open yourself up to
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, I do want it. And thanks. I mean, even the cards I've got or the message I've got from people out there has been absolutely brilliant. And, you know, at some stage we'll get back to all the people that, you know, have heard me talk and know that I'm not in a good place. Even down in the local supermarket or wherever, they're always asking after it. And it makes a huge difference. So for yeah. people just to say, it does make a huge difference to people in my situation, especially if you don't have a partner or a significant other. And so
yes.
and people have been yet.
Yes.
No, that's the next step. So look, thank you very much
thank
as well.
You.
Thanks,
thank you.
Thanks as always for a platform to be able to share with people. And yeah, hopefully, fingers crossed, news will be good.
The wonderful Brent Pope. If you enjoyed this conversation, please show your support. It only takes a minute and I would be so grateful. You can leave a rating or a little comment on Apple, or you can simply click follow on Spotify. You've been listening to Ready to Be Real Conversations.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.